If I've got 150 customers and 100 of them are retail, I'm not going to go and sell to a bank very effectively because actually, I don't know their language. I don't know how they speak. I don't really know their requirements very well. And I don't know how they operate in the framework of how they're supposed to operate as a business.
Welcome to the MSS Network, your number one source of information for MSSPs, MSPs, and security architects. Uncovering the trusted advisor. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Steve Harrington, Managing Partner at Hosted Solutions, to the podcast. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm very well, thanks, Bill. And how are you?
Yes, enjoying the weather and also enjoying this topic because trusted advisor is something that many corporations, many people, many consultants list themselves as. But before we get into it, our three quickfire questions. What is the problem we're trying to solve here? We know what is a trusted advisor and why isn't everyone a trusted advisor?
So everybody should be a trusted advisor. And I don't mean literally what I'm about to define as a trusted advisor. Everybody should put themselves in a position where they tell the truth to be trusted. That's not the same thing as being a trusted advisor. But most salespeople want to earn their commission. Most companies want to grow and expand, so they end up selling stuff they shouldn't. That's a very different topic, but that's part of being a trusted thing, right? But a trusted advisor, which I've been one on and off since 1999, would you believe it? Different topics, different technologies, but the same premise and principles apply. And trusted advisors range from one end, they're a spectrum like everything else, right? I define the trusted advisor as somebody who's actually truly independent. They don't commercially, intellectually, or emotionally care where a end customer will get what they need to solve their problem. If I have a predefined limit or agenda, I instantly become not independent and therefore can't be wholly, completely, 100% trusted, right? Nobody has access to the entire market globally. That's impossible. There are tens and tens of thousands of suppliers. That's not the goal. The goal, though, however, is to tell the truth. And Hosted Solutions, we have a strap line, which is tomorrow's technology today, which is true. And that sounds great. And it is. But what I wanted to say, but never got the chance, was we'll tell you the truth, whether you like it or not. Bit of a brutal substatement. So therefore, we never did it as a marketing part. But that's the reality. We tell people the truth. Sometimes they like the truth. Sometimes they don't like the truth. But at least they get the truth. And so that's been our mantra for all those years is, look, we will tell you where you're at. You tell us where you need to be. We'll help you bridge that gap between those two things. And we'll educate you on the market. And we'll tell you who probably are the list of suppliers or providers that we should speak to together to define if that's the case. And then we'll go through the entire process and say, look, here's 5, 10, 3, 1 suppliers that can actually solve your problem for you. Let's go and interview them together. We go through the whole process. Then we pick which ones are one that they want to do. And we go through right through to commercial negotiations and implementation, right? So we hold our hands the whole way through the process and that's fine. Some trusted advisors, how do I put this? I've worked with a lot of them. I know a lot of them. I've been a provider to a whole bunch of them. Some of them just literally take an opportunity, throw it over the wall to a supplier, run away and pray that it gets sold. I'm not kidding. That happens. The other end, which is truly embedded one, are people who stay with their partners as a customer for years, decades sometimes. And they say, I'm in this for the long haul. If you do nothing that benefits me in the next 2 years, so be it. But eventually together, we will solve some problems and I will help you out and we will work together. And if you take a short-term view, you're in real trouble. Nobody likes a short-term view anyway. But if some people are after a quick buck or a quick solution they're trying to solve, that will end in tears. Both ends. It'll end in tears for the trusted advisor because they won't get the engagement they want. And it will end in tears for the end customer because they won't get the suppliers they want.
And what about you? You said you've been in this since 1999. But where does your passion for this come from?
So my passion for this, my passion for this is helping. I see so many IT teams, CISOs, CTOs, CIOs, and C-level, and IT manager, infrastructure managers, everybody who has a responsibility in technology, doesn't really matter which bit, where they get run pillar to post from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m, right? Sometimes weekends, and they've got to do this and that and a million other things. They have no time, or very rarely often have any quality time, to actually do the job they should be doing, which is strategically looking after the business and trying to make it grow. And so my passion is helping businesses grow and get what they want. It just happens to be technology is a lever we're pulling, but getting the growth and seeing a customer change, even from a small organization. I remember early 2000, 2002, three, I got put in touch with somebody who ran a recruitment business, right? It was him and a couple of other people. He was just getting going. We worked together for 10 years. By the time he'd finished, he had hundreds of employees, several offices, and he was booming. And to a certain extent, we really helped him. And we helped him because we helped him expand and grow and be flexible and all the stuff we should have done, which we did. And, we became kind of friends after that. But the point was that we helped him get his outcome and his goals and his dreams. And that for me is the goal. We just happened to use different technologies to make it happen. They changed over time, but we helped that individual as a human grow and develop and get more and be more. And that was brilliant. I loved it. And I love watching the transformation of him and his business and how they grew and their customers and everything. So that's just one example, but there are many.
Nice. Well, this all seems really, really positive, of course. And in our managed security service series, we often reflect that some countries appreciate longer partnerships than other countries.
They
And
do.
it's sort of generalizations, but I think maybe this is one. But taking a step back, what about an uninitiated professional, someone in the world of MSP or MSSP, who sort of said, hang on, trusted advisor is just a marketing thing that I use. It's not something that I think too deeply about. What should the uninitiated better understand?
Yeah, so it's a bit like management consultant. That can mean anything, right? A consultant can mean literally anything, right? It just means you consult. It doesn't define who you are, what you do, or what the outcomes might be. Trusted advisor is quite an American phrase, and it's extremely popular in the US. There are well over 100,000 organizations in the US who count themselves as trusted advisors, where they tend to not charge the customer for the advice they give, but they get their income from the market, whatever that market does. So that's one way of defining it. The other way is it's a bit like financial advisor, right? They can charge the customer for the advice that they give and they don't take money off the market. Some of the more unscrupulous ones, and I've seen this many times, is they do both. They charge the customer for the advice and take the income off the market. And that's not cool. Unless they're open and upfront about that. So that is not truthful. So we go back to the truth thing, right? So if you are, let's say, for example, I work for somebody who provides Microsoft products, right? I provide 15 different suppliers, but really 90% of my business is done through Microsoft 365, security products, whatever that might be. Let's say I'm that provider. If I call myself a trusted advisor, the only thing I can really be advising on is Microsoft. I can't really advise on Google or anything else or any competing product sets, Amazon AWS or other security elements that need to be done, like Wiz or what Orca or whatever that might be, because I don't provide them. So I know nothing about them. And if I do know even know a little about them, it's not in my best interest. And people act in their best interest, right? So as a trusted advisor, if you really want to genuinely be independent, and you should, then it should be in your best interest to be that and the customer's best interest to be that. But just telling people you're a trusted advisor, it doesn't mean you are. You have to dig a little bit deeper into how they get paid, because that's ultimately going to be their selfish reason for doing it, whether you like it or not. And how much of the market do they have access to? And, how much experience do they have? How many customers have they worked with? What's been the outcome? Speak to some of those customers and see if they enjoyed the process. Some do, some don't, right? And nobody's perfect. That's fair. But they have to have some credibility that they can stop and go, actually, you're fine where you are, and be okay with that. So not willing to sell them all the time, right? Being then go, actually, what you've got is okay. I don't need to move you to somewhere else. I'm going to sacrifice my income for telling you what the reality is, and the reality is you're all right in this particular thing, right? So that.
Because in a way the whole term trusted is a projection, isn't it? It's like I am a beloved genius. I don't know, like, but I'm projecting, right? Almost, it's not as bad as award winning. That's kind of,
Oh, that's yeah, we that's pitch of salt, well,
yeah.
bucket of salt, yeah.
I went past a cafe and it said voted number one cafe by cafe owner,
Yeah, exactly.
which I thought was quite honest.
Yeah.
So who's best placed to be said trusted advisor? Because within the MSS series, we've often had architects say, well, we are the translator. We're the last line of technical defense and the first line of, business know-how or whatever. And we've also had people say, well, you should really cherish technical acumen, and the higher up the pole you go, the less you remember. But then conversely, we've had people say, well, it doesn't really matter because things change so quickly that even if you had a 1,000 years of Kubernetes experience, which is the kind of the joke on online at the moment, it'll change.
That's all of that is true. In the end, knowing the outcome that somebody wants to get, the goal of the trusted advisor is to get their customer the outcome. You can help them define the outcome in the beginning. Sometimes you go, have you got a problem? Yeah, I got this challenge, I need to fix it. Do you know how to fix it? Nope, I have no idea. Right. But what does it look like when you do fix it? Well, it looks like this. Okay, so you define the outcome together. But once the outcome's defined, my job and the job of a trusted advisor is to help them get their outcome. Nothing more, nothing less, but to get that outcome. And what people often struggle with, because they have their own agenda or their own 1,000 years of Kubernetes experience, but that's all they've got, is the answer is grow. It's like if you go to a doctor, right? Actually, this is a great example. You go to a doctor and you go, my back hurts, right? And the doctor will go, okay, well, I'm here to give you pills to help your back, and here's some pills, right? But you go to a back specialist, they crack your back and they do whatever. If you go to a podiatrist, they'll say, oh yeah, but it's your feet, you see. Your back all stems from your feet. And you go to a head guy, and the head guy will say, yeah, but if your neck's not aligned right, your back's not. You'll get a different answer depending on the area of expertise that you go and get that from. That's really important to understand where people are coming from, because that's their world and that's how they see the world. The real best in true trusted advisors have a global holistic view of the body and go, okay, in this scenario, you need acupuncture. In this scenario, you need pills. In this scenario, you need operation. And that's quite difficult to come across. So if you speak to technical people, to bring it back into our world, they'll give you the technical answer because they know the answer. What they don't want to do is say, I don't know the answer. Or I do know the answer, but this is the way I would solve it. It might not be the best way to solve it. So it's about getting the right people in the room at the right time. And one of the reasons I've got 500 suppliers I can choose from, right? One of the skills is choosing which 5, 10, 3, 1 that you bring into the room at the right people to give the answers that need to be told. It's not about, oh, well, this one works better than that one. Well, we don't know in this scenario. It may not, but we have to investigate and find out. And so I'm giving you a very long-winded answer, but the reality is that it needs to be as broad as possible. And then have access to as deep as possible, technically, as quickly as possible. Does that make sense?
But then, I mean, it does make sense. But then I wonder if I am looking for a trusted advisor, how do I know they have the credentials unless I've been prone to trust them about something? Because otherwise, do they get some ISACA certificate in advising trustedly, or
I wish that'd be nice. No,
over
no, they don't.
or do I see, okay, they have a PhD in quantum encryption something, like. What are the signs?
So in theory, my kids could become a trusted advisor. I wouldn't, but they could. They're both at uni, but they could, right? Because there's no barrier to entry into this market, particularly. It's like IFAs at least have a barrier to entry. They've got to take exams to become an independent financial advisor, right? In the consultancy world and this world, nobody does. So one of the most important things, and this is what I have said to clients in the past, look, you don't know me from Adam. All you can do is trust what I say. I can give you customers you can speak to, and they can tell you their journey and what they found. And that's really important, of course, right? Because you need to get that validation. But what I would do is I say, let's start with something really small, something that's really annoying right now and that needs to be fixed. for something that's small, and therefore, if it doesn't go well, you're not going to lose your job. The business isn't going to fall over, right? Nobody's going to die. But let's do it and let's fix it together, and then we'll build up that trust over time, and I'll show you what we do. And so it's a proof point that starts it, and that's really important. So they want very something really simple. They want, I don't know, a new firewall, or they want something to, something to fix really quickly that you can easily fix for them. And that going through that process gives them access to you, the resources that you have, the way that you deal with things, the way that you talk through the process, and the way that they get solved. And by doing that over enough times, you just build up that trust. And people aren't stupid, right? These people know what they're doing, and they realize that you're actually quite good at what you do, or you're not good at what you do. And going back to earlier, when I gave you an example, this happens a lot. A trust advisor will say, "Oh, I've got an opportunity," and throw it over the wall to any security provider they happen to have gone on a drink with last week. And I'm not kidding. And they just then pray that the sales team over there then goes and sells it. That's not somebody who's a that's not a trusted advisor. That's not what should happen for the exact that reason, not building it up.
So, and I'm reasonably sure I'm just poking the bear with this question, I
Yeah, go
suppose.
for it.
Why is a trusted advisor not essentially a byword for VC, so?
Because I, in my own example, I don't have anywhere near enough capabilities or knowledge or strengths to be a virtual CISA. Because I wouldn't technically know how to, well, actually, I've got enough technical knowledge because I've been in the room enough times over 25 years. But specifically speaking, my job is to help the business grow and find the business outcome by using the right technology to make that work, right? If I was a VCISO, which is a really good point, that means that the CISO's job is essentially choosing all the right suppliers to solve the problems that they want. And it isn't. It's a million other things as well that I wouldn't be any good at. Like responding to a hack, or being able to do change management control process, or whatever that might be. Right. There's good.
But isn't a VC so a VC so because they don't have that accountability and they are kind of dropped in as a trusted advisor friend because maybe they can't afford someone and maybe it is a part and parcel of selection. But having said that, bringing us back to who is the trusted advisor, when companies are on the hunt, they want to market their SaaS product, some of them say, oh, I want to meet CISOs. And I always say, well, okay, but what's the CISO going to do if you pitch them? They're going to, if interested at all, they're going to ask their architects or their trusted advisors. So why don't you talk to them?
And some of them do. I spend a lot of time with suppliers finding out what they do and what makes them different, what makes them better, what separates them from the crowd, what's unique, right? Because a lot of them do. If you look at a managed detection response business, so pure MDR, right? There's a lot of people that do MDR, a lot. Right. Some do better than others, but they all have unique things that they do. And understanding that uniqueness is really important because you can go, oh, actually, in this scenario, Mr. Customer, these are the guys you should probably speak to because they specialize in finance or manufacturing, whatever that might be, for example. But I know that because I've spoken to the supplier. I appreciate it's difficult that to your almost first point, technology changes all the time. It makes it difficult to keep up. But that's kind of our job, is to educate and keep up with that technology. That's what we do. The CISO doesn't have time to do that. So yes, we need to be able to engage at that level and allow them to be able to, to understand. But yeah, that's the really important part of what we do.
And in assessing the background and credibility of these providers, you mentioned sectoral experience. Is that just to make the customer feel comfortable, or is there any real benefit that this SaaS provider just knows the law? They know legal companies. Is there any real benefit to that?
In some industries, there is benefits. So, finance, insurance, legal jump out because there's regulatory challenges in at least two of those. Right. So they do need to know the regulatory frameworks. They do need to understand what is the constraints of their industry. You know, retail does not have the same constraints as a finance, as a bank, right? They don't have they just don't. They also don't have the same requirements. So if I've got 150 customers and 100 of them are retail, I'm not going to go and sell to a bank very effectively. Because actually, I don't know their language. I don't know how they speak. I don't really know their requirements very well. And I don't know how they operate in the framework of how they're supposed to operate as a business. So it does matter. Yeah. But there's very little difference between, let's say, looking after a marketing company and looking after, you know, a general office that does recruitment. I can't see any difference, particularly between those two. So it is sectoral. Yeah. There are outlying sectors that should be heeded and dealt with on a fairly special basis with good knowledge. But yes, and that is true. And look, you know, I've dealt with a lot of manufacturing, for example, is a good example. Not very well regulated, really. It depends what sector they're in, but manufacturing generally globally is not particularly regulated. But they do have specific challenges. A lot of them are in China, right? So they've got to be behind the Great Firewall. A lot of them in Hong Kong, a lot of them in Singapore and places like that. And they have different things that they need that out of a security environment that, you know, an American-based or European-based business just don't. So you need, you know, and you need to know how to solve it. You need to have done it before. Otherwise, you can't help them out.
So maybe it's more about the trust. They trust that you're going to add value beyond your technical acumen because you understand their field. And
Yeah.
that's what makes you trusted.
Yes. And actually, I'll give you another a great example. About 12 months ago, maybe a bit less, I went and grabbed two global CTOs that I know, and I took them for lunch and I asked them some questions about when you go to the market, what happens? What do you do? Literally, what do you do? If you have a problem that you need to solve, forget I exist, what would you do? And they both interestingly said the same thing. If they don't know, they go and ask their team, to your point earlier. And if the team doesn't know, and I'm not kidding, both of them said, I'll Google it. Right? I go, oh, that's fair enough. Where else are they supposed to go? Right? I said, okay, well, so now you're relying on the best marketing efforts of the particular supplier that you're trying to solve for, because they're good at, either good at Google or not, right? So you're going to miss out on a whole bunch of great technologies because their marketing teams aren't as good as the other marketing team, right? And that's not really a very good or fair playing field, you know, or level field to be able to make a decision from. But interestingly, what both of them said was, I said, look, this is how we work, this is what we do, you know this, right? So I'm just going through. I was trying to validate how they wanted to buy. And I said, but what we will do is we won't, if we don't know, we will tell you. Right? So if you come to me and you want this, you want that, and I go, I just don't know. And I don't know how to find it either, particularly, or I don't trust somebody enough to be able to tell you that, I will step away and walk away from that particular problem. And they both value that very highly, because what a lot of people do is they just say yes to everything and then try and figure it out later. And that's a terrible idea.
Yeah, I think many people find that with builders as well.
Yeah, they do.
But I guess then, let's say, we've got our community. Our community is a channel community that does want to meet end customers. That's kind of the thing that we prioritize, because people often leave one of the trifecta out of the debate. They go, "Oh, I'm going to an event about the channel. What's it about?" "Well, it's about the channel." "Okay, cool." But if we, if we combine end customers, then there's a sense that people can do market research. Where does the trusted advisor fit into that? Is the trusted advisor necessarily in the world of a third party? Or could the trusted advisor ever be embedded in the end customer? Or is that just because if we run with the argument to say they've got to be independent, could they ever be embedded in an MSP? Or an MSSP.
No.
But then, if they're independent, could they ever be embedded in an end customer?
Yeah, embedded is an interesting word. So, you know, if you look at From Good to Great, do you remember that book written in the 70s, or any, I don't know if you remember that book, very famous book. It's all about manufacturing. But their take on life was, if you can embed yourself so deep in the customer that they don't know where they end and you start, you've been successful. right? That was their premise of making that happen. I'm not sure that's what this is. I've often said this to end customers. Look, I sit on your side of the table looking out to the market, right? That's the point. Because if I don't sit on your side of the table, then I have a natural allegiance to something that's not going to serve you 100%. Whereas if I sit on the, on the supplier side of the table, I have an agenda, well, however small it may be, that isn't pure and therefore can't be truly independent and give you the honest truth. So I have to sit on your side of the table, but it doesn't mean I take your side, because I'm not going to be the yes person who sits there and goes, oh yeah, everything you say is correct, because that just won't be the case, right? But I will sit on your side in terms of the view of the world. But I definitely won't sit on your side in the world of the view of the world against you, and therefore we'll shine a light on some things that you might not like, right? In terms of how you're doing things or how you want to do things, and we may educate and advise. But yeah, I get your point. It's hard to be embedded in terms of part of the furniture, but it's good to be part of the side of the table that makes them understand that you've got their back.
Yeah, that makes sense, because at least if your stated objective is, the solution to their problem, then it's up to them to really be honest about their problem. If they said, my problem is I want five XDR platforms at once, it's not a relevant problem. They're not making sense. But at least if you're obeying that, because there is always the feeling, or many consultants report the feeling, that the customer doesn't know why they brought them in, or they don't know why, or they find out that it's one CEO somewhere who's basically like, I hate all these ideas that people have come to me with. I need you to prove them wrong.
Which is a dreadful position to be in, right?
Yeah.
Trying to prove anybody right is rarely a good idea.
Yeah, because then you're trusted for that one person, and then maybe the rest of the company is a tricky one. But since we do want to throw the channel a bone, how can the channel become trusted advisors in this case?
So it depends where you how you define the channel. So I, as a trusted advisor, I am the channel, or I'm part of the channel. So if you look in the US, it's a great example, a good deal of the channel business is done by MSSPs and SaaS providers and anybody up to Zoom or AT&T, you name it, right? It's done by the channel. A bunch of those are actually independent people who, like us, will give advice, true, really good advice. And they will then choose that supplier, and their supplier will supply. And so we are the channel. Whereas in the UK and Europe, it's much less like that. In the UK, it's much more reseller, managed service provider, MSSP run type organizations who provide that information to the C-level people or to the end customer. And but they're just selling their wares, and then the customer's got to interview four or five of them, and away they go. And if you look at Germany, there's a lot of consultants who charge for their time for doing an RFP or equivalent, and they're very structured in the way they do it. If you look at France, it's very reseller driven. Benelux region is much more like the UK, whereas there is a consultants and trusted advisor market, but it's nowhere near as big as the reseller market or just big brands that are trying to sell. So the US is probably ahead of us, way ahead of us, and has been for a very long time in this type of channel model. But it is growing here in Western Europe for sure, more than it's ever grown before, because I think people see the value. If you're a supplier, like you're an MSSP, right? And you want to get out to the market and get in front of the right people. You should have a channel strategy. You'll either have a direct sales team or you'll have a channel or both, right? If you're going down the channel route, then you have to decide what the best way for your product sets, however that may be, however many there are, to be able to get in front of the right people. What's the most efficient way I can get my message to the right people at the right time? That's your only goal, right? And if a trusted advisor model is one of those, happy days, great. If a reseller model is one, even better. If OEM or providing, partner with somebody bigger than you, is it? That's great too. And you've got to try all three. And I've been here a few times running teams, global teams, getting with this exactly this problem is we've got a really good product set. We've already got a really good message. How do we get it in front of the people we need to speak to? And choosing a channel strategy is complicated. It's complicated by country, region, and type, and all the rest of it. But the trusted advisor world is a part of it. It's not all of it, but it's a part of it. And it should not be ignored for sure, because they tend to a slight moral high ground in terms of the lack of agenda and all the rest of it. So you've got to prove yourself on your worth rather than I just pay more commission or more reseller margin, for another channel partner.
And I hadn't really considered that sometimes the channel needs the channel, because for many SaaS products, the MSSP is their channel into the
Yeah, they are the
world.
channel. Absolutely.
But I hadn't considered that, in fact, some MSSPs themselves are looking for a channel to get out to the wider world. And we
Absolutely.
have seen MSSPs partner with MSPs. I
Yeah.
haven't really seen them partner with VARs. But then again, I love joking about this. If you look at the list of 100 best VARs,
Yeah.
there's really only like two VARs in there. The rest are MSSPs or hosted providers managed hosting.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And they, so yeah, it is a very complicated. I got, how do I put this? I do a bit of consultancy work, actual consultancy work for money. The people want to get my understanding of the market, very particular segments of market, and they pay me an hourly rate to do it, right? And I give them my attention for that. And one of the things was a couple of weeks ago, they were asking me to define how the channel works. I said, we haven't got a spare 1,000 hours, right? Because it is so mixing. It's like spaghetti. Everybody goes different routes to find different ways. And they go, well, is an MSP the same as a carrier, same as a VAR, same as a reseller, same as a. And the answer is yes and no. And it's always yes and no. And it's no, those guys buy from those guys and those guys partner with those guys. But in this situation, it's the other way around. And it's never clear and it's never one way. And that's fine. That's okay. And that's the problem about, labeling people as MSPs or MSSPs. And labels don't help in that scenario. What helps in that scenario is what do you provide? Where do you buy it from? And who do you want to sell it to? And how do you want to get there? And you can label yourself any way you want, right?
But in so labeling, isn't the goal of a VAR inherently to be a trusted advisor? Otherwise, what value are they
Yeah,
adding?
yes. Having been a VAR and worked with thousands of them over the years, yes, they're supposed to be, but they're not really independent. You can't have every supplier. But their job is, in theory, is to pick the best of breed to solve a fairly generic problem, right? So, for example, let's pick something easy, right? So a data connection up to the internet for a customer. Pretty easy problem to solve. Their job is to provide the best carrier or carriers to provide that data connection, right? You should trust them enough to not pick somebody who's fly by night and cheap and is going to go bust tomorrow morning. Like that's their job is to take that risk out of your decision making process. You pick something easy. If you ask a VAR, which cloud security CASB provider should I choose globally? That's probably not a very good question for far, because they go, well, I've got one or two maybe, and I go, well, there's 50. Yeah, I know, but I only know one, right? Okay, well, that's not a really good answer. So, for VARs are very good at volume and stuff that people know they want. Like, I want 10 mobiles. I want an internet connection. I know what it is. It's clearly defined. Can you make sure I get the best of it? And can you make sure that you manage it and don't screw it up? Right, that's their job in essence. They do way more than that, but when you boil it all down, that's what it is. And that's not the same as providing advice. It's not the same thing.
But isn't another part of trusted advice how to get things cheaper, more cost effective? Like,
Yeah.
are we really focused? I mean, yes, solving a problem. I'm sure there's some problems, there's some solutions that are very expensive that would solve your problem.
No doubt.
But to what extent is the trusted advisor supposed to look for value for money? In that, VARs. Traditionally, it's the sort of the Del Boy model, the stack 'em high, sell 'em cheap, or the Walmart
I buy it
model.
for £1 and sell it for £1 for what I can get away with, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. But then, how does that skill set come about? Because it doesn't feel like a natural fit. Someone has been, managing technology stacks for a long time, and now we're saying, get good value for money, get a good deal, or
Yeah,
is that not in their wheelhouse?
that's entirely should be in the wheelhouse. Absolutely. Because and there's two ways you can get it. One, the customer should know what they're paying. Often, very rarely, I would say very rarely, are customers buying something net new, like brand new. They've never bought before. They have no experience in how much it is, or they've never been there. That's very rare. It's rare. So most of the time, they have a sense of what they should be paying, either based on their current contract, other people they know, word around the market, benchmarking. There's lots of ways to get that. So they do have a sense of what's good. The other thing is the trusted advisor, and we get this all the time. They go, "Is that a good price?" They go, "Well, the answer to that question is, well, it depends, right? But based on what I've seen with other customers and what they've paid for a very similar environment or thing they're trying to achieve, that is more than reasonable, or actually is pretty good, or no, you're being ripped off. We need to go back and renegotiate, right?" But part of our job is to negotiate the commercials. Absolutely. And I did it. We did one 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. We went back twice to the supplier to renegotiate because I knew there was more in there. I just happened to know that market, right? And I go, no. That's where you are. I get it. And it's a decent price, but I know you can go here. And they did, right? And they got it and they did the deal. But one of the benefits of having two or three or four suppliers in that end BAFO process is you get a benchmark. One is £1, the other one's £1.10, one's 50p, right? One's £8.30. And I'm like, hang on a second. Why is one 50p and one's £8.30? Okay, well, you either cancel that out or find out. And then you go, one's £1.10, one's £1. And now there's very little in it. You just use the best one. And so there is just practicalities of having multiple opportunities to solve a problem. If you only go to one, you're only going to get one answer.
Yeah, I have the visions of those what are they, trusted shoppers or trusted buyers, hosted
Yeah.
by, I've forgotten what the
I
term
know what
is,
you mean. Yeah, no.
because, well, they those buyers can actually be a little challenging for suppliers, because they're forever asking for quotes. And people have reported, well, I don't know what this quote's for. Is it because you're just curious?
Yeah, exactly. You're kicking tires, or do you actually want something? Yeah. And often buyers, God bless them, and any of you listening, this is clearly not true about you, but any buyers, they often know the price of everything and the value of nothing. And that's okay in isolation, but it's not acceptable for the overall business itself. And to go back to this opportunity that we closed for a supplier 2 weeks ago, the buyer got involved at the last minute, literally the last minute. We were working this thing for 9 months. They got, but the last minute, the buyer came in, which fine. And he said, "No, I'm going to go to another supplier because I want to benchmark the price." And we'd already dismissed this other supplier. "Now we're going anyway." Like, so we wasted another month while they went and did that. And the price was no different. And they didn't want that supplier anyway. So it was just, they can get in the way because he just knew the price. He didn't look at it from any other angle. And that was frustrating to say the least. Not all buyers are like that. I've dealt with many brilliant ones who stay in through the whole process, but yeah, they can get in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. And it depends what you're like as a business and what you're buying, right? If you're buying a firewall and you know it's Juniper and you know what you want, why wouldn't you go and get the best price? You know what you want. It's not hard. Just go and shop around. Yeah.
So where then does this leave the world of the MSSP and MSP? What should we maybe, I mean, have you got an idea of the name we should give their person that they want to be a trusted advisor? Should they be called s consultative salesperson, a sales engineer? When
Yeah. Yeah, that's
if they
very good
can't
question.
be truly independent, what should we call them?
The most value I've seen, and I've been both of those, by the way. I've been an MSP a few couple of times and an MSSP as well. And the most traction we ever had with an end customer was when the technical people got involved with the technical people. Because technical people by nature are trusted way more than salespeople, right? Just, I mean, it's human reality for nothing else, right? So for two reasons. One is human reality, but second, technical people often, very often, I've hired enough of them, worked with enough of them, employed enough of them, right? They actually tell the truth, whether it hurts them or not. Going back to my earlier strap line where that I said we will tell you the truth whether you like it or not. Technical people are brilliant at that. And they build credibility super quick because they don't try and sell it. They just go, well, this is what it is and this is how we can solve it. No, that won't work, right? They're not very delicate about it. They go, no, that just doesn't work, but this does work. They're very black and white, which I love. And customers love it because they go, well, this guy just tells me the truth, right? And so actually that's probably the best way to do it. To establish that rapport, and 90% of sales are done around rapport. I mean, end of story, full stop. That's just react. That's the world. If you want to build that rapport super quick, and you want to make sure that people get that engagement as fast as possible, then you get that traction in the sale. Get the technical people involved, because once they do get involved and they create a relationship with the other technical people on the other side, it's very hard to break that bridge. And when the C-level people want to make a decision, as you said earlier, they just go down and speak to the technical people and they say, which one do you want? They go, well, I want that one because I've got the best relationship and I trust these guys. And I know that when it fails, and everything always fails at some level, I can call them up and they'll sort my problems out. And that matter, all that stuff really, 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 really matters all the way through the sales process and when you're implementing as well. But to actually get the sale done, get the techies involved quickly. Really, really quickly. Don't try and leave it to salespeople to try and close a deal. Techies are better at it.
Yeah, and then especially when we do panels on the super engineer, a
Yeah.
complaint is I was having a good day, and then sales promised that our thing could fly you to the moon,
Exactly.
which wasn't exactly what
No, and the techie person will say, well, I can get you 10 feet off the ground. That's it, right? And that's the yeah, and that's the way that these people communicate now. And yeah, and I would trust a techie much more. I hope
I.
that answers your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And a personal example in the world of events, I do remember a sponsorship a colleague saying, could we get this wholly unrelated person to this wholly unrelated event? And I said, no, I mean, it's the
No.
wrong topic. Like, well,
Yeah.
if we did, then I'm like, no, like one random person is not going to be,
Not gonna help.
enough.
No. No, absolutely not. No.
And there's always the immortal, although maybe this will not chime as a topic for many people who don't know the defense sector. We had some sales people saying, wow, we have so many builders merchants and building companies interested in the Future Fires mortar event,
Okay.
because they had
It's
conflated
more
mortar for building and
bricks and
mortar
mortar.
from the sector. Anyway,
Yeah.
now, so
Definitely wish for
I know it was quite a funny quite a
that's
funny
good.
time. But what about for you? What's next for you? Where will we next see you?
We are always trying to get the message out that it doesn't have to be the way that a tech leader has to live their life desperately scrambling around, right, trying to solve all the putting the fires out and going around with a fire blanket. They don't have to, they can relax a bit more that they can do that and still be able to strategically achieve their goals, right? And that calms a lot of people down, actually, because you go, because it's stressful. If you're running around all day trying to solve stuff, and then the other day that you don't have in that 24 hours, you're trying to actually do better and be better for the business because the CEO, CFO, and everybody else has given you, that's your job. We will help you with that. And again, trying to get that message for us and others and get everybody who's in a sales role or an advisory type role to actually tell people the truth and walk away if they can't help them is one of my lifelong passions. Because in the end, if you're a salesperson, right, just a salesperson trying to sell something, and if you go and sit to somebody and you go, actually, this isn't going to work for you, and you walk away, the credibility you build with that individual is enormous. Not only will they might be referred to somebody else, They will remember you for a very long time because you're the one that walked away and told them the truth and said, I can't solve your problem. And if we can change the industry, one click of the dial in that direction, we've won. Because that allows people to get the truth much quicker, be way more efficient, stop wasting salespeople problems on a deal they're never going to win anyway, and trying to build a false funnel that their bosses want to see. And actually, the reality is you're never going to do that deal. You're never going to help that customer. Stop trying to fill it falsely. Just go after the stuff where you can actually really add value, actually add value, and then you'll win way more anyway. That's my soapbox goal, but we'll see over time how it goes. But we're trying to do that part.
Well, fantastic. I'm very pleased to catch up with you. You've very kindly spoken at a number of events over the years, so I'm hopefully welcoming you again soon. But yes, trusted advisor, a term often bandied about, but maybe not reflected upon enough. And maybe we need to, advise ourselves on that in the coming weeks and months, especially as companies look to rebrand and sell new SaaS widgets to all sorts of people, whether or not they can claim to be trusted. Isn't it a title that has to be bestowed upon you? I don't know. Big questions, and I'm glad that we caught up. So, Steve, thanks very much for coming on. This has been another fantastic edition of the MSS Network Podcast.
For more MSS content, please visit MSSnetwork.com.